Did you know I'm utterly insane?
Because the whole world gone crazy!
Yeah, you want to see crazy? I'll tell you.
Have you gone mad?
Most everyone's mad here.
Everyone, welcome back to Milkshakes Markets Madness. If you are new to the show, man, you've got a lot of digging to do to get to where we are in the rabbit hole. Milkshakespod.com is a good place for you to start. The YouTube channel has a playlist called Start Here. The entire YouTube channel is very well organized into different playlists. We do different segments throughout the week. We feel like it's structured in a way where you can slowly work your way through the conversations, eat the elephant one bite at a time. And for this recording, I just want to let everybody know, because it's going to be shared on Saturday. This is not our typical full-length weekend episode, which will come out tomorrow, Sunday. This is more of a late release for the Madness Edition. And on the Madness Edition, we kind of go a little off the rails, a little bit of markets, but more just kind of the madness that makes us shake our head and do a bit of a facepalm. And quite a week for that. Before we get into anything that's gone on this week, the highlight, really where we left off on the Monday peak of the week, which is our beginning of the week episode, we talk about what's forthcoming. We teased everybody that you are off to St. Bart's for a summer camp retreat, financial markets madness adventure with Hugh Henry. You want to share a little bit of that adventure with us?
Yeah, you know, I had never been to St. Bart's before, but I have to say, you know, everybody that's been there says it's the most amazing place, and I tend to have to agree with them. Having been there now, it's like this little jewel box that's just dropped into the middle of the Caribbean, and it's like no place I've ever been. I was telling Hugh that it kind of reminds me of New York, not in that they're similar, but that, you know, when you're in New York, you know you're in New York. It's really like nowhere else. And that's kind of how I felt about St. Bart's. It's just like the perfect little island. And it's not very big at all. I mean, you can go around the whole thing in less than an hour. And, you know, every time you turn a corner or go over a hill, it's like you want to stop and take another picture because it's just, you know, perfect. So, yeah, we had a fantastic time. And, of course, Hugh is Hugh. And the property that he has is incredible. Roman Abramovich bought a place down the road from him, you know, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. And we drove past it. I think Hugh's house is better than Roman's. So, you know, it is what it is.
What is he? What's it's Chateau Le Blanc, or is that what he calls it?
Le Blanc Bleu, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it even has a name to go with its exquisiteness.
Yeah. No, it was. I mean, listen, he was a fantastic host. And you know, I think you and I talked going into it. I wasn't really sure what to expect because, I love Hugh. He's fantastic. But you just, you know, it's a little different going to the guy's house and hanging out with him for 4 or 5 days, you know, how it's going to go. But it was a lot of fun. Met some really cool people. He's got some really interesting friends, obviously, really successful people. And, you know, talking to them and, you know, kind of hearing what they were thinking about the world and kind of the trades that they had on was really pretty fun.
Well, there is a video that they shared with us, and we will put a link into the show notes. And it's another one of those reminders that, you know, sometimes when you're watching these videos, it's worth taking a note, going into the description, looking at the chapter timestamps and some of the other resources that are there. So I will pop that into the show notes, but can you pull the curtain back a little bit? What were some for you, you know, you're one of the five people in the world who understand money, according to Hugh. So what were some takeaways for you that were high level or kind of really had you scratching your head?
Well, so, you know, George Gammon was there, who's a buddy of mine, and he's really good about kind of digging into things and doing his whiteboards and kind of showing people step by step how things work. And then Jeff Snyder was there, who I've gotten to know pretty well over the last 4 or 5 years. And I mean, that guy goes deep down the rabbit hole in how the whole system works. And, you know, I won't claim to know it as well as he does. But just kind of sitting around for 2 or 3 days talking to the guys. And, you know, one of the things that we really got into was you know, this notion of reserveless accounts. And what I mean by that is, you know, the way the system kind of works is that banks have reserves and then they use those as collateral, right? They use the reserves they have either in their accounts or at the Fed to create, you know, loans, and, you know, everything's kind of pyramided off the monetary base. And that is true. That is how it works. You know, but then we have this euro dollar market where they don't even really have a monetary base. They sort of do, but they, you know, it's just leverage on top of leverage. And then not only that, but, you know, then you get these, they're called these Nostro accounts, where it's just one bank lending money to another bank, and they just kind of, you know, it's basically just a ledger. So you owe me and I owe you, and, you know, the central bank doesn't even necessarily know about it. And so you just realize that it's just level upon level upon level, and none of it really exists, you know. And as long as the shark is swimming, so to speak, as long as the system is moving and people are happy and spending and credit's being extended, it all works great. The problem is when it all stops working great, right? And you get a credit contraction. And, you know, because there's no one entity that really has a grasp of the whole picture, I kind of put my finger on it this weekend as part of the reason that, you know, you get the Fed and the ECB and the Bank of Japan, and they always do these ad hoc solutions when the problems come up. And the reason they do these ad hoc one-off solutions that kind of fix the current problem is because nobody has the big picture, because it's all this, like, kind of this amorphous ether of credit that's been extended all over the world in this euro dollar market. And since it's unregulated and unmeasured, nobody really knows, right? They think they know, but, you know, they don't have a clear picture. And so they just try to solve the current problem right in front of them. And, you know, that's why I think, you know, this is eventually going to end badly. You know, again, whether that's next week or next year, 10 years from now, I don't know. But, you know, these guys know the system about as well as anybody, and they don't even understand exactly how it works. You know, we're all kind of, you know, trying to piece it together as best we can and then explain it to others. And, you know, the other part of the problem is, and we were all laughing about it, because, you know, if you don't start with common definitions, then it's even harder, because, you know, I've come at it from one way, just digging through the dirt, basically trying to figure out how this all works. And I know how to explain it in my words, and Jeff's come at it from a little bit different language, right, in a different little bit way. And so, you know, if he says one thing, there were several times where we'd be deep into a conversation and we'd have to stop and say, okay, what do you mean by that? And it wasn't even necessarily a confusing term, but just what I called cash, they might not call cash. Or if you said reserves, you had to be very specific. What do you mean by reserve? Because one person's reserve is somebody else's, doesn't think of that as a reserve. And that's just a very simplified example, but that's part of the problem. You know, then George, he does his whiteboards and he explains it in a certain way. And so it's really hard to have a really deep conversation, even from people who really understand it. It's hard for them to have a very, very simple but it's concise conversation about it, because you're always having to stop and, like, make sure that everybody has the same definitions. And then when you consider this is just all over the world like this, it's no wonder that you get problems.
Yeah, and a theme that we've shared and talked about and kind of gone on circles around sometimes is understanding the size of the whole before you know, predict what the response is going to be, or more than anything, predict what the effectiveness of the initial response is going to be. And so if you're in a room with a bunch of people who are agnostic in terms of trying to understand these things, they're not approaching it with an ideology and trying to fit it into that box. They're pulling the engine apart and trying to see how it works. And from what they figured out, as at least from a, you know, a functionality of the monetary system, they don't necessarily fully know the inputs that are going in. Do you think, and you kind of hinted to this, but do you think when you have a 2020 type of situation or whatever the crisis may be, do you think they were relatively blind to how, or not blind, but unable to calculate how big the hole was? So the bazooka that they used ended up just, you know, being too much.
No, absolutely. I mean, that's absolutely the case. It's hard to, I mean, if you can't measure something, how can you say how big it is, right? And they don't even know all the different pieces, so it's impossible to measure. All they knew is that the hole was very big. And the thing is the hole is always bigger than the money, if that makes sense, because it's because of the interest, right? And so if one unit of currency is floating around the world fast enough to satisfy the interest on more than one unit of debt, then it's fine. But if there's no velocity, really, you could argue that the hole is limitless, because the hole is going to be bigger than whatever money is there. And so, you know, until you print enough to entirely fill the hole, you just don't know. And this is why, and Jeff would say, first of all, they don't know what they're doing to begin with, and they're flying blind, and they're just throwing stuff against a wall and see what sticks. And that is kind of true, right? It's like they try this program and they try that program, and eventually they try enough things that velocity gets to moving again. But it's really all about liquidity and the velocity of money. If money is not moving around and it's just sitting in there inert, whether it's in cash or treasuries or reserves or however you want to describe it, if it's just sitting there, it's a problem. It needs to be moving. So this is just part of the madness of the monetary system. You know, I feel like those of us in the room kind of understood it as well as anybody, but you know, we don't all agree, and you know, we don't all define things the same way, and we don't all have the same picture or the big picture as well. And so it is what it is. I wish that I could lock us all in a room for a week and we could get to a definitive answer, but I don't think we could. You know, it's too opaque to really know for sure.
Well, there was quite a bit that happened this week, market related, and some of that is directly tied to these conversations you're having. We had the Jackson Hole meeting, the Fed speech, or Jerome Powell's speech. So we're going to save that for the actual full-blown markets discussion coming up here in about a day. I have to say, I'm a little disappointed. I was, you know, from a madness standpoint, from a Hugh Henry standpoint, you know, we're talking summer camp in St. Bart's. I was hoping there'd be like, you know, 3 days of ayahuasca and you'd come out with some whole new epiphany.
Well, you know, I will say I tried a couple different types of rum, a couple different types of tequila, a couple different types of, you know, champagne, but it never got too crazy from that standpoint. But I will say the first morning I walked out of my room and there's a big turtle, you know, about that big, sitting right outside my door. So that was pretty interesting. And then I took another 5 steps and there was another one. So that, you know, there's these turtles kind of crawling all over the property. There's wild goats all over the island. On the morning that I left, do you know what the mokes, those little moke cars are? It's like these little things for tourists. And so, one of the guys was taking me to the airport at 7:30 in the morning and, we were in the moke and there's no like trunk. You know, there's like 4 seats. And so I'd thrown my suitcase in the back seat and I'm sitting up front. And, you know, it's like San Francisco. It's like there's all hills. Like there's no flat part on the whole island. So we're going up and over. And we go around this corner probably a little faster than we should have. And my suitcase just goes flying out of the moke. And then it's bouncing down the mountain, down the road in front of us. It finally comes to a stop, and we're both just laughing because it was too funny not to laugh. But I'm lucky it didn't like bounce like off into the brush and just be gone.
Oh man!
So that was pretty funny. And then George and I were running around in one of those Twizios. Have you ever seen those Twizio quad bikes? Mm-mm. It's like a clown car, and you know George is 6'4". I'm 6'5", and once you got in, it wasn't too bad, but it took us like 5 minutes to get in and out of the thing. So that was pretty funny. And then apparently, like I left in the morning and apparently it's a little tiny airport. You know, you fly in and you come over this mountain and just zoom down. And, you know, it's like if you don't stop, you run into the ocean, literally. And so there's videos, you can see it online where, you know, people fly, you go over this road and the wheels from the plane almost hit the cars going over the road. But then apparently coming in, right after I left, there was a plane landing a couple hours after I left, and it landed and hit a helicopter that was on the runway. So, you know, it seems like I got out of there just in time.
Well, I'll let that slide as acceptable doses of madness for your trip. But it was a helpful bit of insight into some of the takeaways. Sounds like it was fun. Sounds like it sparked some fresh conversations around some of these same old problems. Speaking of maybe some same old problems, you know, we did create this madness piece so we can go a little off the rails, like I said, and people can be prepared for the conversation doing that. So why not pivot really quickly into some of the political stuff that's been going on? The first thing, which is pretty wild, speaking of plane crashes, is the two top, we can say, I guess, leaders, but the main figureheads of the Wagner Group in Russia. You know, there was this initial coup. Everyone thought, you know, once it was kind of squashed that Putin would take these people out immediately, and there seemed to be some sort of compromise or treaty made, and he would be left alone. He'd just have to go into exile. But lo and behold, apparently there's, you know, the question of this is a fake death or not, but apparently his plane crashed, shot down, what have you. What are your takes on this recent event?
Well, you know, like anything, you just, it's just a signal of more problems over there, right? And I don't know what the real answer is. And I'm sure there's some people that say this was probably faked as well. And other people will say, no, this is proof it really was a coup. And, you know, I don't know if anybody really knows. And I certainly don't. But it's, you know, what's interesting is I read an article from some, you know, Russian dissident. I don't remember his name. Some Russian dissident who was kind of hiding out in the West somewhere, but was a, you know, he's a commentator, you know, on things that are going on in Russia. And the article was a week or so ago, and it was a pretty good article. It was in the Financial Times. And he basically said, you know, regardless of, you know, whether it was a coup or it was not a coup, you know, Prigozhin will be dead in the next 6 months. And, you know, that's kind of what's happened, assuming he's not hidden off somewhere, right? But, it, you know, and then the idea, and then Putin, of course, Putin is saying he didn't have anything to do with it. Well, you know, hard to believe that, but maybe, right? And the idea is if the head of the Wagner group can get shot down, you know, on a flight from Moscow to St. Petersburg, and, you know, Putin's not able to figure out who it was, well, then what does that say about Putin's internal security at his two most important cities, right? So, you know, who knows what's going on, but it's just more, like you said, it's more ammo for the madness out there. And whatever really happened, I don't think things are going to calm down anytime soon.
Well, speaking of things not calming down soon, Donald Trump, along with quite a few others, were indicted in Georgia this week. And I think that's a conversation piece in itself. But I think for me, at least, what I thought was so maddening or comical about it is you figure that a lot of this is more just to throw shade on Trump and these other parties and kind of make a mockery of them, maybe try to discredit them, you know, some negative attention. And Trump took the mugshot, and he was pretty much been gone from Twitter since he was banned, even though Elon invited him back. And his more or less his return to Twitter was him posting the mugshot, kind of stealing all of their thunder if they were going to use this to try to disgrace him.
Well, you know, it's pretty funny because earlier in the day, I just kind of made the joke on Twitter that he should make a big smile and then use it as his official campaign, you know, photo. And, you know, he kind of did one even better. And he, you know, had this, you know, this stern look on his face and tweeted it out, first tweet in over 2 years. And yeah, and so this is, you know, whether you think he deserves to be in jail or not be in jail, or whether you think he's guilty or not guilty, as I was actually watching it last night because I kind of wanted to see what the reaction was. And so I was flipping around from a couple channels and I put on CNN because I wanted to hear what they were saying about it. Because, again, whether or not you believe with CNN, they have a big reach, right? And you want to kind of see what that side is saying. And I watched it for about 45 minutes and they had his picture up the whole time, this picture. And after 45 minutes, they say something to the effect that, you know, we don't really want to show this picture too much because we don't want to give him, you know, too much attention. And I'm thinking, you've had his picture up there for 45 minutes and that's all you've talked about. But at the same time, I think they use the word judiciously. Now, we're going to use this picture judiciously. I was like, you guys are such clowns, right? You guys are such hypocrites. Of course, this is like the best rating CNN's going to have all year for this. But again, you know, oh, and this reminds me, I need to say something because I was just going to reference another Trump quote about when he said, I could walk out onto Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and my, you know, supporters wouldn't leave me. And there's some truth to that, right? But I said something last week in last week's show referencing another Trump quote, and shame on me, it was a wrong quote. It wasn't truly him. It was something I had heard years ago. And, you know, of course, I don't do research on every quote I hear attributed to Donald Trump. But it sounded like something he would say, and I had just assumed that it was. And, you know, I shouldn't assume those things. So for those of you who commented in the responses on the video that I was wrong and that it had been proven wrong, you are correct and I was wrong. I should not have used that wrong quote. So anyway, here we are.
What was the quote?
So the quote that I referenced last week was, you know, years ago, I think when he was first running, someone said, you know, back in the 90s, there was a quote that he said, if I ever ran in politics, I'd run as a Republican because Republicans are so stupid, they wouldn't vote for me, or something to that effect. And apparently that was proven to be a false quote. So, you know, again, shame on me for using that one. But he did say the one I could walk out on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and my poor supporters wouldn't leave me. So
yeah, I mean, almost same, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, look, speaking of Trump, the impact that I think you kind of have, and the show sometimes has when we talk about politics, it does feel like you've had a busy week triggering people. Was there anything that stood out to you this week, particularly around even some of this Trump stuff, that you felt like it was people losing their minds?
Well, the one that comes to mind is the Kara Swisher one, right? So Kara Swisher is this media personality, podcaster. You know, she's done a lot covering the, you know, the tech space. So she's kind of in the business world as well. And, you know, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago, she and I had a little bit of a back and forth on Twitter. And, you know, she basically at the time was, you know, commenting on the pettiness and, you know, all the toxic, you know, comments going on in the social media world between Elon and Zuckerberg and some of these other people. And then last night she's out there, first of all, she's making fun of, you know, Vivek, the presidential candidate, not only making fun of him, but making fun of his last name. And, you know, can you imagine if Donald Trump was making fun of an Indian and making fun of their name? She would have a field day with that, right? And so her comment, back a couple months ago was, you know, this toxic pettiness, you know, amongst these, you know, billionaire CEOs. So I just basically retweeted something, you know, retweeted her retweet and said, I'm glad to see that Kara is, you know, above all this pettiness and toxic, toxic comments. And of course, you know, an hour later, I'm blocked. So this is pretty typical. You know, they're such hypocrites. They think that they can, you know, they think that they're so open-minded. But yet if anybody slightly disagrees with them, you know, then they shut it down, call them names, you know, block them. And look, I don't care if she blocks me or not. It's the hypocrisy that just kills me.
You should screenshot both of those and send it to the Twitter account Defiant L's, L being L for losers. I don't know how familiar you are with that account, but they have you and I both enjoy the humor of the Trump history account.
Yeah, yeah. I think so good.
Yeah, I think anyone can love that. But the Defiant L is definitely more right leaning in terms of who it focuses on. But its objective primarily is just to show hypocrisy. It just so happens, especially over the last couple of years, the party, if you will, or the side of the aisle that seems to put their foot in their mouth the most has been the left. And so there's just these classic, like, intense opinionated tweets that they then contradict themselves with, you know, in such a short period of time. So another account that's worth following.
Did you happen to see the very end? I didn't watch the whole debate. I just saw a few of the clips from the Republican debate. And did you see at the very end when DeSantis, he basically said, I promise I will be there fighting for you till the end. And then he gave that cheesy smile. Oh, my God.
So cringe.
What? That was the best. It was just, my wife showed it to me and we both about fell off the couch laughing. It was just so funny.
Yeah, so that's getting memed pretty hard right now. You know, I think what DeSantis was able to do in Florida and still does as a governor, especially during, you know, where everyone else was going through these lockdowns and pushing a lot of policies that just in my opinion, everyone, that's what politics is about, right? It's aligning with what you think makes the most sense. But I think he did such a great job. But to see him just almost massacre himself with some of these awkwardness things is too funny. And you know, speaking of the debates, you know, while we're on this political kick, we might as well just get it out of our system. What are your thoughts on Trump's conversation with Tucker? I mean, I think at this point it's got to be getting close to 200 million views.
Yeah, you know, to me, I haven't even watched it yet. I've seen a couple of the outtakes, and I've had so many people tell me I have to watch it, and I just haven't yet. But it's not, and this kind of goes back to the whole thing with Swisher. You know, it's like, I get it that you don't like Trump, and I get it that you think he would be a horrible president. And I get it that, you know, you think that some of his supporters are racist or backwards or hillbillies or whatever you want to call it, right? But, you know, there's hundreds of millions of people in the United States who don't feel that way, you know? And again, whether you agree with them or not, it doesn't matter, but you continually making fun of them is what feeds them and what gives them more energy. So it just, to me, it shows the lack of self-awareness, you know, on the behalf of the media, you know, whether it's the Trump picture or whether it's all the negative coverage or whether it's, you know, the continual, you know, the bash. It's like they're shooting themselves in the foot. Like, if they don't want Trump to be president, well, then stop, you know, stop shooting yourself in the foot and wake up a little bit, you know? And so, yeah, it's all part of the madness. I wish I could just bottle it and sell it, because if this is just, you know, the outrage and the Trump derangement syndrome is real, you know, and maybe you think it should be real, and that's fine. I'll respect that. If you think it's deserved, fine, but it is real. Like, people cannot handle it. They literally cannot handle it.
Well, we did have some madness in the stock market. I think at this point, some of those events we'll save for the weekend episode. I think it'll mesh better considering the kind of the tangent we went on here. But one last thing, maybe I'll drop in front of you to get your feedback on. It was a madness week, which means it was kind of a meme week. Lots of different jokes and satire getting thrown around. And speaking of tone deafness or people who are lack self-awareness, Chamath, I mean, speaking of massacring yourself, you know, this guy made this comment about being in the arena and chastising somebody that he, you know, basically, you know, dumped on to make a buck.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because probably, how long ago was this? Maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I was in New York or San Francisco, and I went to this investment conference. It was one of these Sohn conferences where, you know, 5 or 6 people get up and give their presentation. People vote on it. And it's, you know, it's like they say I'm long or I'm short. It's basically an investment idea, but it's a charity thing. And I didn't know who Chamath was. I never heard his name before. I think he had just recently left Facebook and maybe he was running a VC fund or something. No clue who he was. And he got up and he gave one of the best presentations I have ever seen. And I think I might have even tweeted out something about it. I was like, I don't know who this guy is, but he's amazing. Like the presentation he gave, the eloquentness with which he gave it, the force of his arguments, you know, the pack. Like, I was like, this guy is freaking brilliant. And so then, of course, I started following him and started, and I was like, oh my God. You know, it didn't take me long to realize that maybe the book was the cover was a little better than the book itself. And then now, you know, he's just kind of become a caricature of himself. And, you know, it's once, you know, I never begrudge anybody their money. And, you know, to the extent that they, you know, an entrepreneur, they started a company, they did well, they made money, you know, good for you. But my God, try, if you make $1 billion, at least try to stay grounded. You know what I mean? Try to interact with a few normal people in your life. And it's funny because he will come, him and Bill Ackman are kind of the same. You know, they're super successful. They've made all this money. And then they'll try to make these comments or these arguments that relates them to the common man. But it just, again, total lack of self-awareness. And I a lot of times I think these people should just not say anything. And I'm sure they think the same thing of me, so fair enough. You know, Chamath is this, it's just like every month it's like he does something that just puts his foot further in his mouth. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's not easy. You know, you can't every time say something that resonates with everybody, and you're certainly going to put your foot in your mouth once in a while. That's part of having an opinion and certainly trying to find success in the world. But I feel like part of the thing that just really frustrates and infuriates people is this attitude that, you know, they're better than everybody. I think they underestimate how much luck had to do with it. Luck has a lot to do with where you start off in the race too. And, you know, it's like you're saying, a total disconnect with the common person. It's their faces are already in the mud and they're just stomping on top of them when they're making these soapbox comments. But in his case, he's just been continually just a disaster. And to have that total lack of self-awareness and continually.
Well, I think part of it too, is the quote itself. Like that quote, I think he's basically referencing that Teddy Roosevelt quote, which is literally one of the best quotes ever. And the thing is, I actually really love that quote because, you know, I've probably referenced that myself, you know, in these little Twitter wars and these little, you know, trolls that show up and call you out for every bad call or whatever. And, you know, it is true. Like, it's very easy to cast stones from the sidelines, and it's much different if you're in the arena fighting every day. But come on, if you're a billionaire who doesn't have a whole lot to worry about, just compare yourself to the same, you know, same people that are out there fighting the fight today. It is a little differently. So I think, again, it's the lack of self-awareness as much as the quote itself. Maybe the message, I think the message he was trying to send is probably a good message, but his ability to pull it off, just fell flat.
Look, if you're somebody on a street corner selling lemonade, I'm happy to hear you tell me about the arena. Yeah. But if you're a billionaire who many would argue made that money by grifting and saying one thing out of one side of your mouth and then doing another, it's a whole nother level of hypocrisy. So look, it's madness. It's funny. I will say it again. We thought we would do a madness segment. It would be like, ha ha ha, look at this one thing. And we'd be on with our day. It'd be the way we ended the week. And here we are doing another 30-minute plus recording of all the chaos that's been going on. Granted, we didn't have a midweek update this week because you were off in the glory of Hugh's presence and everything that was going on there. But it looks like we're caught up on the madness, and we will catch everybody up on the markets, what has transpired this past week, in our full-length episode, which we will be recording here shortly and sharing with you in about a day. So, Brent, thanks for spending the time to share some of your thoughts, some of the chaos that has gone on this week, and we look forward to hearing from you on your thoughts for the markets as well.
Cool, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you guys soon. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.